Welcome to the Barbell Coach and Physio. Diving deep into all things powerlifting, strength, and rehab. Your hosts are Matthew Burton from River City Barbell and Laura Fox from Fox Physiotherapy and Strength Rehab.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barbell Coach and Physio. Today, or tonight, I was lucky enough to have on our sponsor from Rep 1, Jordan Burke. So Jordan is the founder and CEO of Rep 1. He created it and his story is really unique. So if we know who Rep 1 are, they are a velocity-based device, which is now going to be created into something else in the future as also. So you'll hear he has something in mind there. But also the velocity-based training is for anyone who's doing weightlifting or things like that to track the speed of the bar. So it's used a lot in powerlifting, but from the perspective we used it in, he'll give you a bit of an understanding of what velocity training is. We have done a previous episode on the podcast with someone from Australia who has a velocity-based app. So if you want to go back to that, you can hear about velocity-based training through that as well. But this one with Jordan, I really enjoyed because the history of how he made the device, and he's actually has a history in powerlifting as well. He'll tell you that he had a record a few times in there, which we had a giggle about. And I said to him, don't worry about that one, because if I had a record too, I'd be saying the same thing. But he once competed in Worlds and everything before. So he has a history. He's not just someone that created a device and then said, hey, powerlifters use this. He has a history in powerlifting too. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I really enjoyed talking to Jordan about all this, but I think we will get him back on again. We're going to do a three-way one with another person that from his gym who's a physio and has a bit of a perspective on how they use the device in their industry. But now this was just an intro to Rep 1 and who they are. And if you guys are interested in velocity-based training or a velocity device, the link's in the bio. There will be a discount code down there, as well as there will be a link to their website if you want to suss out how much it is and everything like that. So if you guys want to check out other sponsors as well, Five Active and Cyborg, I'm actually going to be doing a raffle. I'm going to be giving away 2 kilos of protein to someone who gets picked out of a hat, drawn out of a hat, from giving a 5-star review, leaving a review on our actual podcast to help with our things, and tag us in and share the podcast on social media. And we are going to give away a free tub of like Cyborg's protein. So if you guys are interested in that, tag us in your stuff for social media. So reshare the podcast on social media, tag us, the Barbell Coach and Physio, and then leave a 5-star review and a comment below, and then you'll go in the draw, and I'll draw it at the end of next month. So we're in June now. Well, this will come out on Monday. So I'll draw it actually, at the start of July. So you got 15 days to share a couple of episodes. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Have a great day. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barbell Coach and Physio. Really happy and excited to have one of our sponsors on the podcast this week, the CEO of Rep 1. Do you want to introduce yourself and just give us a little insight about who you are before all of Rep 1 and like give us just a little bit of a brief about yourself?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, happy to be here. Let me go ahead and give you that intro. So I guess I'll start with myself. A fun fact that not a lot of people know. Back before powerlifting exploded, I won a junior national championship and an open national championship in the USAPL. And in 2014, I went to Worlds.
Oh, cool.
You know, around that time, I was experimenting with velocity-based training because my coach was a guy named Dr. Mike Zordos. And he now does a lot of research in autoregulation and velocity-based training. So I got a kind of an early peek into that world. And back then I was a, you know, college student, just graduated, and I couldn't afford some of these, you know, really expensive solutions. And I decided to make my own. The first one was in a shoebox. We call it the magic shoebox. And we would, you know, put it in my buddy Nate's trunk and take it out, bring it to the gym. We'd have this ridiculous shoebox underneath our squat rack with, like, I think it was yarn or something stupid to attach to the bar. And it worked. You know, I hit some really good totals with that magic shoebox. And we got some, you know, some tepid interest on social media. And so I just put the designs out open source, called it Open Barbell. And that got a decent amount of interest, enough that like we had some really, really fascinating people, some like, you know, really influential coaches reaching out to us saying, hey, listen, I don't know about this open source crap. Can you just build some? So that started us off on this journey of building these batches of open barbells. So we started out with 105 open barbell V1s, sold those out in 4 minutes. And then we did 350 open barbell V2s, sold those out super quick. Then we did 500 open barbell V3s, sold those out within, I think, a week. Because people knew that once they were out, they were out. You can't get any more.
Yeah.
It wasn't sustainable. Those periods of my life where I would design these things and then sell them all and then go and build them was ridiculous. And I, you know, I told myself that if I was ever to build this as a company, it would have to be for a different reason. And I would have to be a completely different design. And then one day I was talking to Dr. Mike Zordos, and this idea kind of popped up where, what if we could use velocity in place of RPE, right? What if we can kind of figure out how to automate that part of it so people can just almost ignore velocity entirely and just get guidance? So that started us off on this path that we're on now. I redesigned Open Barbell from scratch into the Rep 1 device that it is today. And so we make them on a continuous basis. And the software that we make now, primarily for sports teams, does just that. It automates velocity-based guidance. So if you are an athlete in a weight room that uses Rep 1, you no longer need to know what VBT is to do it.
Yeah.
And we're rolling a lot of that stuff out to the consumer-facing apps soon.
So like with the first one you built, like how did you build it? Did you just in your own home with little stuff welding and stuff together? How long did it take you to actually build it?
So this is kind of my specialty. I build, I'm like a, my background's in mechatronics.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it's like the combination of mechanical and electrical engineering.
Yep.
And so I knew how to build these things. The first one was really simple. In fact, I wish I had it with me. I'd just show you, but it's like I had this terrible 3D printer and I made this really goofy little encoder wheel and I got like a $2 component that can read the encoder wheel. And I got one of these giant goofy, like alarm clock screens and a little microcontroller. And I just had it reading these speeds out. Oh, and I got a tape measure. The first, by the way, three batches, all like 1,000 open barbells have springs in it that were ripped from IKEA tape measures. I've got a video on the Squats and Science Instagram, if you scroll way back, of me buying 500 tape measures from IKEA.
That's so funny.
And the lady at the register thought I was completely nuts.
How did you figure out that the spring in the IKEA like tape measure was what you need? Like, this is what gets me like tripping is like, how did you figure out that spring was in there to use it for what you needed it for?
Well, I mean, a linear position transducer, which is what the string, VBT devices are called. Those are just glorified tape measures,
okay,
right? Because if you think about it, we have a range of motion feature on Rep 1. You could use it to measure things in your house if you want to a highly precise figure. And so it's just a tape measure. It's retractable.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I started with the engineering process, just designing a better tape
measure. Yeah, that's cool. It's funny that it come from that because the tape measure just sucks back in and pulls back out, except you've just got something that automatically sends your data. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Give it for a bit of insight besides just like about Rep 1, like what were your numbers when you were powerlifting?
Yeah. So like I said, this was before powerlifting exploded, right? So I'm not going to give you Taylor Atwood numbers. In fact, Taylor Atwood won nationals after I retired from the 74 kilo class and his total made me look like I was a child. Now I had just under a 1400 total at 74 kilos. And then at 83, I had about just under a 1600 total.
Yeah. Still a solid amount.
Oh yeah. I mean, at 83, that was the national champion, Haya Duke, I think his name was. Yeah. He had a 1601 total. Oh, that was a national champion total back in 2015.
It's changed now.
Yeah. In 2016, I think is the year that John Hack came in and blew it out of the water.
Yeah. Good old John Hack.
Yeah. For a little while, I had the American record bench at 422, and John Hack broke it. And I don't know if anybody's taken it back yet.
Yeah, John Hack, and he's just a freak, like beyond a freak. Monster. I swear anything he touches, just he does it. Like now he's doing like strongman stuff at the moment. It's just insane. Like,
yeah, I remember seeing John Hack at Raw United meet in Port St. Lucie in 2013. He was like 17 years old, shredded to the bone. I think he was still pulling close to 700 back then. His bench was nowhere near where it was now. His bench was like his weak point. But he got second place to Jamie. He benches a reverse grip. Only guy I've ever seen.
I've never seen
in competition. I forgot his name, but he had the world record total at 83 for a little while, and then, but that's been blown out of the water since then.
Another one's Jamal Brown. He's just a freak.
That ridiculous.
There's a bunch of them like in the same kind of like area. It's just like I can't believe like some of the numbers. In Australia, we have like some strong lifters, but our lifters are nowhere near like up to where the state standards are. Like we've got some crazy people over here, but nothing to do with like what's in America and the UK.
It's blown up in America for sure. You know, maybe social media has something to do with it. I think, you know, the purist in me likes to think that people have realized that heavy strength training is a solution to a lot of problems. And as a young person, I think we see, you know, the new 74 kilo world champion is evidence of the fact that young people are now some of the most talented powerlifters in the world. And I think that's because not only does it solve a lot of physical issues, it solves a lot of mental issues.
Yeah.
You know, you lift heavy things to, I mean, bodybuilding objectively is a lot more about vanity because you're judging the way you look. Powerlifting is not about vanity. A lot of the time when you're a powerlifter, if we're going to stick to this example, the 74 kilo new world champion, whose name is escaping me, you know, he's pretty shredded, but he's, you know, he could walk around as like, he doesn't even look like they lift a lot.
Yeah.
So did I when I was 74. But you do it because of this sense of strength in this, you know, this feeling that you get as somebody who's good at something, somebody who's improving at something, right? At least that's what I think. And then sure, it makes you look better as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's helped kind of blow up on social media and attract a lot of attention to the sport. But yeah, it's been going nuts for the past 10 years.
Yeah, and it's only getting bigger too. And I think like we, to go back to like the mental side of things, like I'm someone that comes from a mental health background and I know that helped me a lot and I see a lot in my clients as well. Similar thing, I think it's a good place for people to get involved in like a really supportive community as well. So like that does help a lot. You know, people say like powerlifting is a very solo sport, but I do see that like the community and networks within powerlifting are very strong and like connected. And I feel like it's funny, me and my partner went to like a Banksy art exhibition on the weekend and there was a girl from Canberra that just knew mine and my partner's name from like Facebook. And she came out of her way and she's like, oh, you're D and Matt. I love what you guys do and everything like that. And I was like, oh, like you're from like three states away. I've never met you in my life. Like, don't know who you are. And you're telling me that you love what we do. And it's just crazy that like lifters just are so supportive of everyone.
Yeah. And how much people care about this stuff. And, you know, you can get on a podcast and talk about powerlifting and people actually listen where, you couldn't even get anybody but your parents to show up to a powerlifting meet when I was doing this back in 2010. But the times are changing.
Must be cool for you to see how much has sports grown as you've built Rep One as well. Because I'm sure you have yourself in like a few communities like weightlifting, powerlifting, and like other sports as well. So you'd probably be able to see the variance in like which sports grow and what communities are like what in each one.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard for us to do. I would love to do like a hardcore like demographics breakdown of who buys our stuff because it would be a good cross-section of VBT, right? And I can't do that because people buy from their own personal email addresses. Students buy from .edus. You don't know if it's the university or if it's just some person there. But like just anecdotally kind of from what I've talked to, we're in like dozens of sports. It's hard to count. I used to make a joke that we're going to be in every sport but swimming because it's not waterproof. But then we have USA Swimming using our products.
Yeah.
Because they lift weights.
Yeah.
And, you know, golf, everything, NASCAR, WWE, all that stuff.
So people are using them for golf, like, as well, to, like, see how their strike How fast?
No, I think it's just for people who lift when they
golf. Okay, true.
Golf, you lift. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, it's in a wide variety of stuff. But that being said, powerlifting is still a significant portion of our revenue.
Yeah.
You know, athletes and powerlifting. And I would say it's probably second behind just collegiate strength and conditioning.
Yeah. Do you want to give everyone a insight of what velocity training is? So like a breakdown, and so people have an understanding a little bit more about what the actual device does.
Sure. I'm going to start maybe a little esoteric. I'm going to get back. I'm going to get to the kind of like the core of it to start with, yeah. Which I think will help in the long run. There's a unique phenomenon. And I say unique, I mean, like it's unique among data science that we have an objective measure that correlates really, really well to a subjective measure. So the objective measure is the velocity that you lift a thing. And the subjective measure is your perceived exertion, right? So you could kind of take that for granted if you don't think about it too much. Velocity and RPE are almost linearly correlated. And in fact, you could do a linear regression to do like a velocity RPE correlation table. And so if you don't take that for granted, it's a fascinating observation. And from there, you can make a lot of kind of assertions, right? Okay, if velocity is correlated really tightly to my perceived exertion, how difficult I think a set is, then you can use velocity as an objective kind of like second pair of eyes for your training. It can inform you once you give it the context it needs on how many reps you have remaining, if you should go up or down in weight, if you should increase the number of reps or sets that you do, if you should rest more or rest less, if you're fatigued or if you're not fatigued, right?
Yeah.
It's just like this, that one simple correlation kind of explodes into all these potential autoregulatory possibilities. But, you know, I guess in a more simple way, velocity-based training is just the speed that you move. And if you've ever been to the gym and thought to yourself, oh, that was fast, I should go up and wait, that's velocity-based training.
Yeah. The one thing I really like about it so far is the fact that on the days that I feel like shit, I look at that velocity and I'm like, oh, it was faster than yesterday, but it felt heavier. So I'm one of those people that in prep at the last few weeks, I start to psych myself out because I think something felt bad. If I know that velocity speed's moving at a better speed than last week or relatively only a little bit slower, I'm going to be feeling a little bit more mentally stimulated from it, I reckon. So that's the one thing I've liked about it so far.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, one of my favorite uses of velocity-based training is being able to take advantage of the days where you were performing better than expected.
Unreal, yeah.
You know, perform better than expected or performing better than you actually think you might be. There's two sides to that coin, right? There's also the days where you think you're performing well, but you're really not. And maybe you should take that signal and pull back, yep. Right? And then when you do that, there's this old training method. Again, I'm going to bring up my kind of mentor and friend and old coach, Dr. Mike Zordos. We call it constitution training. And it was daily one rep max training. I don't know if you're familiar with any of that stuff.
Nah, not really. But
yeah, it was fascinating. Dr. Mike Zordos, he would experiment on himself just by collecting data kind of anecdotally. And eventually that turned into a research paper. Oh, cool. And that research paper has been published by now. But the data would show these ridiculous trends, super consistent trends in fatigue, right? If you just map what that 1RM is, it's a perfect proxy for fatigue because there's few other variables that can impact it,
yeah.
In the same magnitude as how terrible you feel, right? But it was very predictable. Whenever he'd have a good day, the next day he'd have a bad day and so on and so forth, roughly, right? And so you'd get this kind of wave. And if you can predict those good days while they're happening and predict those bad days while they're happening, then theoretically you can get more of a linear response in how well your training goes, which is beneficial for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah, totally. And then it's beneficial. You can pull back on those days and kind of get rid of a bit of fatigue to account for the next time that you have a good day. So the good day might come closer because you pull back on that bad day. Instead of not being able to look at the data and be like, hey, I've hit it, I feel like shit, but I'm going to push even harder, and then you end up sending yourself even worse.
Yeah, and a lot of people will find that kind of heretical, if I'm saying that right, this idea that like, first of all, powerlifting used to be this thing where it's mind over matter. You know, you go in there and you just punish yourself and you get stronger. But, you know, as technology advances and as we all collectively get smarter, there's better ways.
For sure. And
pulling back on a day where you feel like crap is almost always the best decision on paper.
And it's pretty funny because, like, I train RPE all the time, never really numbers. And I'm exactly that without the velocity. So, like, an RP 7, or if I've got an RP 8, and I go in there, and last week, say, I bench 150, and this week I'm feeling tired, I'm probably going to bench like 150 or probably a little bit less again. Because so I'm doing the same thing, but I can actually see it in front of me by the speed of the bar.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, subjective bar speed, there's good research out there that shows that subjective bar speed and RPE are pretty good proxies for objective bar speed, right? A lot of people can get really far without having to buy a velocity-based training device.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, it scales with your level of experience, right? And so it's, in some ways, like, there are people out there who say, oh, velocity-based training, you know, $400 device, that's really for people who are advanced. But if you are advanced, you actually are more capable of rating your own level of exertion. You're better at it. So you actually need the device a little bit less.
Yeah. But also, like, it, one thing I like about it too is, like, if you use it and you are a beginner, like I said, you could learn RP way better because you can actually feel what a, like, this, when once you work out your scale from 1 to 10, obviously, or six to 10, what your velocity speed is, you know, when you're in those areas that are like hard, when you're doing something on a bad day or a good day, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I've ever met anybody who said, yeah, I bought one of these VBT sensors and it told me everything I already knew, right? That's not really a thing.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are at rating your own lifts, this thing will teach you something.
Yeah, totally.
And if it's not velocity, which it will be, but if it's not velocity, it's going to be like your range of motion. It's I think range of motion is one of the most underrated aspects of these kinds of products. Seems like you have some experience with that.
That's one thing I've noticed on bench too. Like, on the days that, like, I'm having a good day, I'll be like, I'll bench and I'll go, oh, that moved really faster than my last one. And then I look at the range of motion and I'm like, oh, obviously I got tighter because my arch was bigger and my range of motion was shorter. I'm like, so that's why it moved better. That was actually something I come across like a week and a half ago. And then my partner was training with me, same thing. And I was like, look, my range of motion on my bench was way shorter than it was on my like warm-up set.
Right. Yeah. So the range of motion is a great indicator. You know, I might take a few minutes to dig in to some of these metrics. I think, you know, people look at the metrics that come out of something like a Rep 1 sensor and they take them as kind of gospel, right? There's no law of physics that says your velocity is really important for lifting, right? The fact that it's important for lifting is just kind of like a byproduct of the fact that it measures both displacement and duration. So what I mean by that is I have an old friend who only looked at the duration of a lift, right? Which is just the number of seconds, like let's say of a bench press.
Yeah.
Now that's cool, but a couple things. That doesn't take into account a change in the range of motion of the movement, right? So if you press, if you let it sink, like you said, a little further into your chest, or even if you let your kind of scapula extend, what is that called? Retraction.
You got me.
I've never been good at anatomy.
Protraction, sorry.
Protraction.
Late at night, retraction. I'll blame it on the, it's 11:30 at night.
I have no excuse. Yeah. It's 9:30 already. Yeah. But yeah, so I on my bench, from scapular traction to protraction, I get a good 4 inches extra on my range of motion, which is over 100 millimeters. And so you change that stuff, then not only is that not the duration not going to be consistent, but it's not going to be consistent between people either, right? Duration of your bench versus duration of somebody else's bench. Now, that being said, let's dig into average concentric velocity, right? My average concentric velocity and your average concentric velocity are much more comparable than, let's say, the duration of our lifts, right? So in that way, VBT is nice as a way to kind of communicate how well you or I did a lift. But it's not perfect.
Yeah.
So I don't know what your wingspan is. Do you have any idea, like your ape index or whatever?
Oh, I don't know how wide it is, but like me and my partner measured ours the other day and I actually can't remember it. We were doing something in the gym.
Yeah.
And trying to measure it to see how tall we were.
Well, mine is a little bit over my height. I'm like 5'10".
I'm pretty sure mine is like a bit over my height as well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But, you know, let's say that I'm a short guy and my wingspan's tiny. Let's say I got a 5'5" wingspan. You got a 6'5" wingspan, right? Your range of motion on bench is going to be much greater than mine. Theoretically, right, because it's meters per second, you and I should still be very comparable. It's not quite true in velocity-based training because you spend a lot of the time in a lift slowing down and speeding up, right? And so there's a portion of that lift in the middle where you have consistent velocity that's proportional to the amount of effort that you make, right? But everybody will end up with zero velocity at the top and the bottom of a lift, right? No matter how good you're feeling or how fast you're moving. And so it tends to be that the greater the range of motion, the higher the average velocities will be. So you'll see in the data, people who are taller or lankier, they tend to have higher V1RMs, the velocity at which they achieve 1 rep max.
Oh, cool. Right?
It's just kind of a rule of nature. So even within these metrics, I think it's important for people to understand that they're not magic, right? They're not like kind of given to us on, they're not chiseled into stone. They're just helpful. The Rep 1 app has something like 60 metrics in it. And I always tell people to take advantage of as many of them as possible.
Hey guys, just interrupting this episode to bring you a deal that we're offering at the moment. So if you're interested in coaching and you're looking for a coach, we're offering the first 3 weeks for free when you sign up to a 12-week term with River City Barbell on our premium coaching. So you'll get 15 weeks for the price of 12. All you have to do is go onto our Facebook or our Instagram, send us a message and say that you heard this on the podcast and that you are interested in our premium level of coaching. Jump on a free phone call with us. We will discuss and go through everything from your goals to what we offer, show you what our premium level of coaching is, and you will get the first 3 weeks for free. Like that is valued up to over $200. So if you guys are interested, hit me up in the inbox and we'll speak to you soon. I was looking at my metrics now and I think like mine are all around the 0.23, 0.25, 0.29.
And that's like for a single?
Yeah, that's for a single.
For like
yeah.
The last rep?
That's for a single. Yeah.
So that's good stuff. And we're talking about what lift here?
Bench. So
it's bench?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the V1RM is fascinating in itself. You can train down your V1RM and it's actually, you train it down over time. So V1RM is correlated to training age and current level of fitness. Cause if you've been training for 15 years, but then you detrain for 2 years, well, then your V1RM is going to suck. Yeah. It's going to be very fast. And basically the way that I internalize it, I don't know, maybe I've read something that says this, maybe I'm not making this up myself, but think about a squat, right? You're under a bar and you're trying to do a 1 rep max. Well, in the beginning of your training career, you would hit a little wall in the squat and you'd fail immediately, right? Towards the end of your training career, or maybe, you know, after a lot of experience, you hit that wall and you keep pushing, right? And you move really slow through it. And some of the best lifters in the world are some of the most incredible grinders. Well, the way I kind of internalize that is the more you train, the more muscle fibers you recruit, the more muscle fibers you have via muscle fiber proliferation, right? And then more of those can contribute toward outputting a maximal level of force for a longer duration, right? And so that's why we see V1RM training down over time, right? And I think that's also why you see bodybuilders who have these huge cross-sectional areas in their muscles. They're able to grind really well as well, even though they don't really train powerlifting.
Yeah, for sure. And I fully get that. And with time comes skill as well. So you obviously become better and more efficient at doing that movement pattern. So like you said, you're going to be able to grind through that little bit over like someone who's like, oh, that's heavy and it pulls you straight down. Because we all know when we first started training, then you do that 1 rep squat and you're like, oh, and just give up straight away.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, it's not all about how big your muscles are, right? We know that. It's about how well you perform and how well you kind of grease that groove. If you can have all the muscle in the world, but if you put yourself in a poor position, then you're probably going to fail pretty quick.
I wish I could slap like a device on like at comp and just measure what my 1RMs are at comp compared to like in the gym, because it's so different when you compete compared to like when you actually are like just doing like a peak towards the end of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it's funny because whenever I watch a huge competition, right? Like I actually didn't get to watch Worlds, but I'll go back and I'll look at the videos. I'll look at people who do these crazy one rep maxes. And these are some of the best lifters in the world. Theoretically, probably some of the lowest velocity at one rep max out of anybody in the world. And so I'll see people. I think I saw a lifter.
Did you see Taylor Antwood's squat?
I didn't see it. I heard about it though.
Oh my God. 300 and something kilo. 280, I think. But it was, man, it was like a rocket ship. Like it just went like, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. And Atwood does VBT, but he doesn't post his speeds. I wish more people did.
Yeah.
Just so we can look at it in amazement. But yeah, I mean, there are some lifters on the stage who will do incredibly slow lifts beyond what I even thought was possible. I saw a lifter a few years ago. It was a female lifter in the 63 kilo class, Stephanie Calhoun. I don't know. But I saw her pull a deadlift for the win.
Oh, true.
That I counted was 18 seconds long. And 18 seconds from it breaking the floor to lockout. And if you just do the math on that range of motion, I don't know, let's say 400, 500 millimeters, it was like 0.05 meters per second. It was the most ridiculous thing. I've never even
heard. For a max lift, that's crazy.
It's wild. Yeah. I mean, they're the best lifters in the world for a reason.
It was like I benched the other week on my warm up on 70 kilos and it was like 0.19 was like the fastest I've had yet. And that was like on 70 kilos.
Yeah.
So like, and I haven't gone below that at all.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes the bar seems like it's moving through sludge.
Yeah. It's just, it's crazy to think like how fast that was like moving. Yeah. Like it'd be, do you want to go into a bit of detail about how you use the device to kind of build out a scale to match the RPE? Do you like in that sense?
So if you want, I don't know how much people reach out for resources after stuff like this, but I can send you something, a resource of ours, and you can send it to your listeners or people can email.
Yeah, I'll put it in. If there's a link, I'll put it in the show notes so everyone can just listen.
Yeah. I'll send that to you. And people could also email me to jordan@getrep1.com if they want some of this stuff. But we wrote a white paper on basically the least amount of data that you can collect to do a full velocity RPE correlation table. And the reason why we did that is because a velocity RPE correlation table is a lot of data. It's like if you want to start with 5 RPE and go up to 10 RPE and half RPE increments, and if you want to do it for, you know, a 1 rep set all the way to a 10 rep set, we're talking about 110 data points.
Yep.
And so we found that you can, with an interpolation tool that we made, you could just do data collection for a week with 3 different rep ranges, and then we could kind of fill in the rest. And that's to get what I would consider the gold standard of velocity-based training context. Because if you have a data set of your own personal data that you get within 1 week, which means it's pretty fresh data, it's not old, it hasn't aged out in terms of relevance, then you could use that to pick, to totally replace Prolepin's table. And you could say, based on this RPE, desired RPE, this is a velocity that I should have. So you could use that to set velocity targets, which is a very powerful way of velocity-based training. Also, you get for free, when you do this, you get a velocity RPE percentage correlation table. So it'll say, based on this RPE or this velocity, this is a percentage one rep max that you should be using. So super powerful way to do it. Now, there's a desire to, let's say, shrink from 1 week of data collection to 1 day, or to shrink from 1 day of data collection to no data collection. Now, there are generalized velocity tables you can use, which means no data collection, right? There's also a research paper that I just read recently, and I'm not going to try to reproduce it because I haven't had enough coffee today and I don't want to get anything wrong. But it was a way to do very minimal data collection, and then you can use velocity to auto-regulate the number of reps that you cut a set off at. And so that's another really interesting way to do velocity-based training. But yeah, I'll send you that white paper.
Yeah.
People can read through it, and that'll also have a link in it to the – it's a CSV, like a spreadsheet tool that'll do the interpolation for
you. Yeah, cool.
You create your own chart.
Because I'd actually like that myself and use that.
Sure.
Because, it'd be cool to find that scale. I'm still working with it because it's hard at the moment because I've just been working on bench, that's it. And then I started on deads, but I'm still on, like, reps on deads. So, like, on the bench, I've been doing singles for a while. I've been working up and then I'll get to, like, a certain point and then I have to pull back again and then work a little bit further up. So it's kind of just trying to find closer to that max, but I've been 5 to 10 kilos away from it so far.
Right. And as I get older, and I feel like my body's getting much older than my mind, but as I get older, I find that it takes me longer to find that area in my training where the velocity is representative of my perceived exertion, right?
Yeah.
I'll get there eventually, but like my first set always feels like trash, yeah. Right? And then eventually it'll start feeling like, okay, this is how, you know, 3 plates should feel. So yeah, like you said, it's kind of like an iterative process.
Yeah. So what's the future for Rep One? Like, what, where are you guys going from here? Like you were saying to me, you got some few things updating soon.
Yeah. So I showed you, Matt, before we started that there's a thing right down here that I can't show anybody except for you. And that will be coming out pretty soon. We're really excited about that. We think it's going to change the way that people think about what we do. I mean, to be a little bit mysterious, I guess, and to give you my thinking on that, you know, I started off this podcast talking about how I didn't think velocity-based training was an interesting business. It was a cool hobby, and I could do the open source stuff and help people do velocity-based training through that. When I thought it was a business is when we realized that we could help automate and auto-regulate some advanced training methods, right? And help people do that at a scale that was otherwise very difficult, and which we're doing with teams right now. We have teams that have 28 racks in a weight room, all outfitted with tablets that use our iPad software and our sensors. And we have one or two coaches, like orchestrators, just running the whole show. Now, that idea of taking data off of a device and using it to automate guidance is not exclusive to velocity-based training. That concept is useful in a lot of different kind of training verticals. And we've built this really powerful software and this really powerful like firmware as well for doing this. So, you know, what else can we apply that to? So that's about as much as I can say about that. But I think that that's going to be really impactful going forward. And then on the software side, we announced Rep One Athlete, the replacement for the Rep One Personal app, a while ago. And we've been working on it. We're coming up on 3 years of working on this app, and it's going to be incredible. And a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about now in, you know, these velocity RPE correlation tables, load velocity charts, all this stuff, we want to put it in the app to take away all of the work that you have to do to build that context.
That's cool.
That context should be built passively. And ideally, I mean, there's no reason why you need to even know your velocities, right? If we're doing all that context building, it should just be able to tell you go up or down and how much to go up or down by and things like
that. That's awesome. That to me personally, like, is one thing that I really will like about it. If it builds the chart for you in some way, takes out that thought process of someone having to learn about velocity, they can just get the device, connect the app, and then next minute, like, you do a couple of weeks of like training. And boom, it's worked out your velocity for you. And it's like, it's almost automated based off your day, or you can look back at something and be like, all right, cool. This is what my chart is built off the last couple of weeks of training. Cool. This is what my velocity was today. Cool. This is where I'm going to do my weight because this is where it should be. And it's just going to make the user experience more friendly to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it'll make the user experience more friendly. It'll also make it more approachable for people who might not be, you know, as advanced in their training age, right? And if you can get this kind of resource, and you don't need to know all this complex stuff, and let's be real, people don't like numbers.
Right? Yeah,
I don't blame them.
I think the thing that like deters a lot of people is that there's only little bits of information out everywhere, and they don't know what's the right information, and then they got to work so much out for themselves, like, that it just becomes all too much and a bit too confusing. So like if that's all in one space, like you said you're going to do, I think it's going to take the confusion out of it, and a lot of people are going to be able to use it. Even like the easiest thing right. I like to say is like even the dumbest person can use it, then it's going to sell even more.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a little bit of a ridiculous thought to think that like, okay, beginner lifters or even Gen Pop would use something like, you know, a tethered sensor onto a barbell. But getting that data and let's say feeding it to a coach who could theoretically be anywhere in the world now, right? That's gives you an opportunity to give a much better coaching experience to somebody than if you didn't have that data. And it's even impactful for people who are at the very beginning of their lifting journeys. And so, you know, that's why I'm kind of a fan of these camera-based systems who can get velocity if they're good enough, because if they can, then it reduces a barrier to entry to people like that, Gen Pop, people who don't want to spend $400 on a device yeah. that's kind of confusing anyway. So they can get that data, potentially give it to a coach, or, you know, have software that can make use of it.
Yeah, totally. And it's only going to expose the velocity more. I think there's a few people in Australia that use it that I know of, but I do think that there's some people who use it to a little bit too extreme instead of using it as a tool. It should be, in my eyes, it's another tool in your toolbox to guide you in the right direction. And I think some people get like so obsessed with it. They're like, velocity, this is exactly what it's got to be. So like, and it becomes, it consumes them a little bit.
Yeah. Actually, the first person that ever had a device that I made that wasn't just me and my friend group is Bryce Lewis. Bryce Lewis, I gave him the first open barbell prototype. It took me 24 hours. Roughly of my time to build this one device. Now they take 15 minutes. That's pretty cool.
So I shipped it to him. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's improved, luckily for me. But we shipped that to him and he used it for a little while and he told me, he's like, listen, this is just getting in my head too much.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. And it's credit to Bryce to know himself to be able to say, you know, if I keep going down this road, maybe I will be one of those people who just, you know, abuses the data and makes it kind of almost like reverse causality, like it'll start impacting negatively the way he lives, or kind of predicting the way he lives, even though it might not actually.
Yeah. I think I'm the polar opposite to that. Like I dig my own grave by how I feel. So if I feel like shit and then something feels like it moves like shit, I'll be like, fuck, it feels like shit. But then if I have the device now and I'm like, oh, that moved faster. I'm like, it kind of just flips the ball and I'm like, oh, cool. I can bump my top set up a bit more.
Right. And I think that's ideally the disposition here, right? Is just kind of being open to the data.
Yeah.
And hey, sometimes you feel so bad that even if the velocity says go up, maybe you just shouldn't. Yeah. There's something to that as well.
But the thing is too, like last prep, obviously with me, I was with my partner at the gym training and I hit like a 160, I think it was 155 bench. And I was like, boom. I'm like, nah, I've got nothing left in me today. And she's like, nah, you've got like another 5 kilos. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. I'll just do it next week. And she's like, no, go and do it. And then I went and put 5 kilos on and benched it easier than my 155. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I had a device back then, I probably would have seen that I could have done it and I would have just gone and done it instead of like just getting in my own head about it all.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I could think back to a bunch of lifts that I wish could be informed by this data. And at the same time, I'll give my own devil's advocate here. You know, there are some times where I wish I didn't have the velocity telling me something, whispering in my ear. But no, overall, I think it's a net positive. It's just more data. It's always good, in my opinion, to have more data. There's a really good saying in the business world, and I think it's like a Warren Buffett style quote. I forgot who exactly said it, but if it can't be measured, it can't be measured.
Yeah. Right. I'm exactly like that too with coaching as well. It's like what data's not tracked can't be measured. So like it's exactly like that. I agree on that more than anything, you know. And like you said, it's just another metric to track to make progress and move forward.
Right.
But yeah, like with your training, like when it came to like hitting 1 RMs, did you ever like see a data point be like, oh yeah, I got a PR today and then you failed it many times?
I mean, you play these head games,
yeah.
Right? So, you know, back when I was setting the American record bench, you know, how many times can I bring that up in one podcast, right? A little braggy, I get it. But
that's all good. I didn't even have a record. I'd be telling, if I had records, I'd be saying it too.
If I was competing now, I would never even touch a record.
Yeah.
I think my bench was around like a 0.15 or 0.13. I think it was about the slowest I've ever benched. And so I'll be kind of going through it, and then I'll see like a 0.16 or 0.15. And I'll convince myself, oh, shit, you know, this is lower than what I thought it would be. I think I could do a 0.12 today. Like I could do it, right? Well, I'm going to go up, and then like I'll make this decision. And then it's like, you know, how bad of a lifter can you be where even when you have the objective version of the data, you still don't really take the hint. So, yeah, I mean, it's something that you have to get used to, too. You know, people think that you're going to get a rep one sensor, you're going to track velocity, and it's going to fix a lot of this stuff. You also have to fix kind of your thinking about it.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Like I've done that with like RPE before, too. I've been like, for example, last week I got sick, had influenza. And then I come back and I'm like, oh, yeah, I got an RP8. I'm sweet. I hit 150 last week and it was like a 7. And then I went and hit 152 and it was like a 10. I'm like, I should have just pulled it back, you idiot. I was like, I just don't like not progressing and pulling back from a week because I was on a really good roll. And the same thing with the data points. I'm trying to get to that point of like where my PR is to get that scale up. And then I was like, oh, fuck, I should have just pulled it back. And then I like hit an RP10 in the garage. So,
well, I've been a coach since like 2008,
yep.
Powerlifting coach. Although I've been retired for a few years now, I own a couple gyms in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
SNS Strength. Yeah. And shout out to anybody who's listening who trains at those gyms. But I would coach at the first Squats and Science. And there were a lot of people. I don't know about a lot, but there were a few people who they were training at the home. Squats and Science used to be the brand that carried Open Barbell, right? I named the gym Squats and Science as well.
Yeah.
SNS for short. And so they were training at the home of this velocity-based training company. And they were being coached by the guy who makes these velocity-based training devices. And I would talk to them and be like, hey, do you want to do velocity-based training? And they would say, listen, I need my percentages. I need somebody to tell me what to do. And then I do that thing. And that's what I do. You tell me RPE, you tell me velocity. I don't want to figure it out on the day, right? I need to know on Friday what I'm doing on Monday,
yeah.
The exact poundages. And, you know, you got to respect it. So that's a valid thing. I mean, I do think that they benefit from kind of altering that mindset, but that's out there.
Yeah, totally. Do you still powerlift now or you just kind of pull back now and don't just train every now and then or?
No, I mean, I can never not do it.
It's kind of an addiction.
To me, like, I like to think I'm more altruistic about it. I have these businesses, these barbell gyms, and I have Rep One because I think more people should be lifting heavy things.
Yeah.
Specifically barbell training. I think it would solve a lot of problems. I'm reading this book right now from Peter Attia. It's about longevity. And he says in this book, the number one intervention that reduces overall mortality is weight training. The number one across all kind of interventions. And a lot of that is because as you get older, one of the biggest risks of mortality is like falling and hurting yourself.
Oh, it's totally.
Very good control of your body, right? But, you know, long-term training greatly increases health span. And you hear some physical therapists and some primary care doctors prescribe medicine so easily when people could be doing strength training can solve a lot of these issues.
I agree there as well. Like, you know, we live in a world now where it's so like we move less. There's so much easier to get food delivered to your doorstep and it's all shit. And like the less people move, the more they're eating. And like I think that with the rise of like lifting weights, I'm like it's only going to benefit people to be a little bit stronger, you know. And if you can pass that on to generations down, like, you know, you're only doing a great thing by doing that. And it's like, that's like when we go back to the mental health thing as well. Like a lot of my crew in my team have gone through a lot of stuff in life and, you know, powerlifting is their outlet and their way of life just to kind of, you know, go somewhere where they can just lift heavy shit and just forget about all the worries in their life, you know? So.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think if Trump and Biden just lifted together, you know, they'd probably be best buds.
Get Russia in there as well.
Yeah, right. Get Putin in there.
Yeah, get Putin in there. have Russia or come in, he'll be, old mate from Russia or come in, he'll be jacked. He'll get banned straight away for drug use. After what they've been through.
I think Biden probably has the worst squat, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's probably the funniest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. But, we'll finish up there. I appreciate you coming on. Where can everyone find you? I'll put in the show notes like that article when you send it through to me, but like Instagram, Facebook, and like our website. So that, and I'll drop all the links for the website and that are normally in the show notes and that anyway. So if anyone's interested in a device.
Yeah. Reach out. Matt, do you have a code, a discount code?
Yeah, I got a code. It's in the show notes for everything. Yep.
There you go. Cool. And so people can have that if they want. Rep1strength.com at Rep1strength on Instagram. We don't really do Twitter that much, but yeah, find us, send us messages. We love helping people. We actually just recently launched this thing called Rep1 Academy.
Yep.
And we're working on some really cool content. It's always going to be out on there.
I signed up to that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, just a few weeks ago. And context is king in velocity-based training. And context meaning your own velocity data, but also in the strategies that are out there. And we have this new free resource that can hopefully help people learn more, because I don't think that there's something really good out there that can help somebody learn from scratch about velocity-based training. One of our advisors, Will Fleming, and a good friend of mine, he wrote a book on velocity-based training for weightlifting, which I definitely recommend if you're a weightlifter. And so we have a chunk of that book in Rep One Academy for free. So anybody signs up for free, they can get all that stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I signed up to that like not long ago and I started flicking through all the data. I'm one of those people, I just go down rabbit holes and just like as soon as I got the device, I'm like, I need to know everything. ADHD problems.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot and it's only ever increasing. The research on velocity-based training is exploded as well, along with the kind of popularity of this kind of training.
Yeah, I'd like to spread it more in Australia, obviously, with the device and everything. Like, so the more I learn, the more I can educate people as well, and the more I can share with everyone around me. So.
Great. Yeah, please do. And I mentioned this to you before, we're looking for a potential reseller in Australia. So if anybody's listening is interested and knows somebody, please let me know. Australia is I think has an amazing velocity-based training community, and they have a lot of interest in this stuff. But you know, shipping, Australia is the single most difficult place in the world to get our products to.
Yeah.
And so we would like to make that easier.
Yeah. So like when I take the device, because I train in like a world gym, obviously, you know what world gym is. And when I put the device down, you'd be surprised at how many people come up to me and they're like, oh, is that a velocity tracker? And I'd be like, yeah. And they're like, oh, I really want to get one. And I'm like, all right, here's, just go to Rep One. Go see these guys. But like a lot of people know of it, but they just don't know where to get it or access it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what's cool about these tethered devices is if you're training with it and you post your training videos, you see this little string in the video.
Yeah.
And so you always see in the comments, what's that string? What's that string? I've actually seen that a lot less these days,
yeah.
But it helps us get the word out for sure.
There's a lot coming on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Barbell Coach and Physio Podcast. Subscribe to hear future episodes and join us on Instagram at Barbell Coach and Physio and at Fox.Physio and River City Barbell _Oz.